started going to the mosque, and I started, like, you know, reading about Islam and all that. And ironically enough, it was through that experience is when I actually finally started to accept who I am. I had a, like, sexual relationship with also one of the imams. Like, I just met him online. And then I started going to that mosque more often, and then I saw him there. I was like, oh, awkward.
You're here, you fear, we're used to it.
Life is so easy for the straight white male.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Germany's marriage equality law will make October more festive. A privacy case in India's high court could bring sodomy law repeal. And the real life of a gay Canadian Iraqi novelist parallels his fiction. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Jessica Andrea.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 22nd, 2017. President Frank-Walter Steinmeier announced on July 21st that he'd signed Germany's marriage equality bill into law. The announcement couldn't have come at a better time. Berlin hosted its annual Christopher Street Day Pride Parade the next day. Germany began offering less-than-equal civil partnerships to gay and lesbian couples in 2001, and despite recent polls showing public support at a record 83%, equality came only after Chancellor Angela Merkel, who personally opposed the legislation, finally allowed her party MPs a free vote. Opponents are asking the notoriously conservative government of the state of Bavaria to challenge the law in Germany's constitutional court, claiming that such radical reform requires a constitutional amendment rather than the simple legislation that passed in Parliament on June 30th by a vote of 393 to 266. Bavaria-based Cardinal Reinhard Marx, who leads the German Roman Catholic Bishops' Conference, said that he would very much welcome a legal challenge by his state.
The measure specifically states that the new law will come into force in Germany on the first day of the third month following the declaration. The delay allows a number of government agencies to revise forms and documents to eliminate references to man and woman, as required by the new law, to make the language gender neutral. So, barring any challenge to the law being accepted by the Constitutional Court, German lesbian and gay couples could be walking down the aisle by early October. Malta's parliament has also passed a marriage equality law that's scheduled to take effect at about the same time. It's now a race to see which European country becomes the 23rd on the planet and which becomes the 24th to host its first legal wedding of a lesbian or gay couple.
India's Supreme Court may review its 2013 decision that upheld the former British colony's antiquated Penal Code Section 377 that outlaws private consensual adult gay sex. But it's in a seemingly unrelated case involving the requirement that all Indian residents use a unique government-assigned 12-digit identity number, which is being challenged in the High Court as a violation of the right to privacy. The NGO LGBTQ and HIV/AIDS advocacy group NAS Foundation, which has been fighting Section 377 for years, has asked the court to overturn that law on privacy grounds. In hearings this week, one of the justices said that if privacy rights are deemed to be fundamental, then the court's 2013 Section 377 ruling fails. He and his colleagues are said to be reviewing Supreme Court rulings in 1954 and 1962, each of which concluded that privacy is not a fundamental right. Under Section 377, carnal intercourse against the order of nature with any man, woman, or animal is punishable by up to life in prison. A number of efforts in India's parliament in recent years to repeal Section 377 have failed. Its defenders say the law is not a practical problem because it's rarely enforced. Opponents say it fuels homophobia and transphobia by tacitly okaying anti-queer discrimination and abuse.
10 activists were arrested in a Tel Aviv demonstration on July 19th to protest the Israeli government's opposition to same-gender couples being able to adopt children. The government's position came in response to a question from the High Court of Justice, which is considering the issue. Thousands of people rallied against the government stance. Some held signs reading, "We are not second-class citizens." Television anchor Nadav Borenstein, who emceed the rally, said, "Me and my partner went around the entire world to try and be parents, and the country that we're citizens of is refusing to accept that our daughters are ours. We pay taxes like straight people, go to the army like straight people," he added. "So why can't we have kids like straight people?" As the Jerusalem Post noted, the government has changed its stance on the adoptions issue several times. The protest demonstration apparently prompted the government to ask the High Court for more time to again reconsider its position. There's no such thing as civil marriage in Israel. Only religious authorities can marry couples, and no traditional Jewish, Muslim, or Christian cleric will celebrate the wedding of a same-gender couple. Equality activists generally support long-running efforts in Israel to create civil marriage for both heterosexual and same-gender couples.
In this week's news of the ongoing effort in the Russian region of Chechnya to exterminate LGBTQ people, the Kremlin defended last week's inflammatory remarks of the mostly Muslim region's President Ramzan Kadyrov that called gays devils for sale and not people. Kadyrov also said during the interview on HBO to promote the Chechen sports industry that families are justified in killing LGBTQ relatives because of our faith, our mentality, customs, and traditions. Even if it's punishable under the law, he added, we would still condone it. Vladimir Putin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters this week that, as for Kadyrov's interview, frankly speaking, very often his words are taken out of context and that nothing out of the ordinary was said there.
Several credible news sources have been documenting the apparent government-ordered genocide that began in Chechnya in April. Hundreds of men suspected of being gay or bisexual have been rounded up and tortured in secret gay concentration camps until they provide Chechen authorities with the names of all of their friends. The Russian LGBT network said last week that any person perceived to be lesbian or trans in Chechnya is likely to also be caught up in the pogrom. At least 6 deaths have been confirmed, some during torture and others in so-called honor killings by shamed fundamentalist Muslim family members.
The Trump administration has finally joined most of the Western world to condemn the purge and to urge Putin, who's the last word on what happens in the Russian Federation, to put a stop to it. French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Angela Merkel have publicly challenged Putin about the situation. Spokeswoman Heather Nauert told reporters this week that the U.S. State Department found Chechen President Kadyrov's remarks very concerning and also upsetting. She claimed that people in the administration have discussed the situation with Russian officials at the highest levels. However, there was no indication that Trump himself challenged Putin on the Chechen purge during his formal and informal talks with the Russian president at the recent G20 summit.
Several transgender people in the U.S. state of North Carolina returned to federal court this week to challenge the measure that purportedly replaced the odious HB2, which forced trans people to use the bathroom or other public facility corresponding to the gender on their birth certificate. It also banned local governments in the state from passing ordinances to protect their LGBTQ citizens from discrimination. Led by lawyers from the American Civil Liberties Union, the new filing challenges HB 142, the measure approved earlier this year and hailed by Democratic Governor Roy Cooper and Republican lawmakers as a replacement for HB 2, which cost the state millions of dollars through boycotts by sports associations, entertainers, businesses, and nonprofit groups. However, as critics noted when it was being considered, HB 142 simply puts an expiration date of 2020 on the ban of local ordinances protecting LGBTQ people and prevents the specific passage by local jurisdictions of measures to allow trans people to use the bathroom that matches their gender identity. This week's federal court filing contends that the differences between HB 142 and HB 2 are, at best, cosmetic, and that unconstitutional discrimination against LGBTQ people continues in the Tar Heel State.
We have updated numbers for last week's breaking news about the contentious Pride Parade in Seoul, South Korea. Based on initial accounts, we reported that about 10,000 marchers separated from hundreds of chanting fundamentalist Christian opponents by about 2,000 police officers did not let rainy skies dampen their enthusiasm during the July 15th parade. The Korea Herald subsequently reported the crowd to have actually topped 85,000 people, the largest ever to celebrate Pride in the South Korean capital. And it required some 6,000 police officers to successfully keep the peace. Happily, no major clashes were reported.
And finally, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III is, at least as of July 22nd, still the Attorney General of the United States. He said he's staying on, despite President Trump's withering criticism of him during a July 18th interview with the New York Times and Washington Post revelations on July 21st about additional previously undisclosed contacts by Trump's surrogate Sessions with Russian officials during the 2016 presidential campaign. Late-night TV host Stephen Colbert has his own issues with Sessions, including the Attorney General's recent speech, behind closed doors, to the rabidly anti-queer legal firm Alliance Defending Freedom. They've represented business people who refuse to serve lesbian and gay couples because of their Christian religious beliefs. They've also helped state officials write so-called bathroom bills to prevent trans people from using public facilities that correspond to their gender identity. Colbert came up with a twist on a venerable queer rights slogan this week in the process of roasting the country's top law enforcement official and his right-wing friends.
Earlier this week, Sessions spoke to an anti-LGBT hate group in a closed-door speech. Closed door? Come on, guys, it's 2017. It's okay to come out. Let your hate flag fly. You're here, you fear, we're used to it.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 22nd, 2017. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK, Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Jessica Andrea.
A straightforward explanation of privilege.
Life is so easy for the straight white man. The gays can't do all the things we can.
Later in the program.
Hayya 'ala
s-salah. In his Lambda Literary Award-winning debut novel, God in Pink, Hassan Namir tells the story of a young gay Iraqi confronting the war within, between his sexuality and Islam, against the backdrop of the war in his country in 2003. The author, now living in the Canadian province of British Columbia, told a similar story at this month's Denman Island Readers and Writers Festival. But this story is his own.
My name is Hassan Amir. I was born in Iraq in 1987. My whole life growing up, I knew I was different. I knew that I was gay. I think at the age of like 5 or 6, I knew I started having feelings toward like people my age, like guys and stuff. I used to wear my sister's dresses growing up, play beauty pageants with them. I never liked sports, never really played any sports. I've always loved art. I loved reading and writing. I knew that when I looked at men, it was just created this like weird butterflies inside me, like growing up. So I was like, but I didn't know what it meant because it didn't really have a label. I didn't know how to put my feelings into words. And ironically enough, when I was in Amman in 2010, my dad's like sister-in-law, like my aunt, my uncle's wife, she said like that she the day I was born that they knew that I was gay, but they didn't, like they were just in denial, like they didn't know how society would accept it, like they just knew and that I was different. So when we moved to Canada, we left Iraq the day of my birthday, so September 9, 1998. We left Iraq, went to Jordan, and stayed there for about a couple weeks, and then arrived in Canada September 17th, 1998. I'll never forget the date, and I'll never forget when I found out that we were moving to another country. I didn't even know what's Canada. I didn't even know what it's like. I didn't speak any word English. Like, I just knew, hi, how are you? Ironically, I learned the word gay at such a young age in middle school because one of my colleagues and like school like students, they said, oh, you're gay? I didn't know what it meant. So I remember going to like my mom and my aunt and said, what does that word even mean? And my mom right away freaked out. She's like, oh, it's a bad word. don't say that again. I don't want to hear it. So at that moment, at even such a young age, I started to associate the word gay with negativity. So for me, growing up, I just always, just kept denying myself because my parents would indirectly hint at the fact that being gay is a sign of illness. It's wrong and punishable by God. When I was 16, my dad took me to, Tim Hortons all of a sudden. He's like, I want to talk to you, to confront me about something. And he said, Hassan, are you G? We didn't even say the word, the whole word. Just couldn't say it. So he started crying. What about your aunts? What about your uncles? What about your family members, your cousins, all the Iraqi community? What would they say? Because for them, it's all about what other people think. It's about the public image, the idea that people finding out, oh my God, it's scandalous, it's haram, it's forbidden, you know? So rather than him empathizing with me and putting himself in my shoes, he chose to feel sorry for me for a bit, but then he was kind of against that idea. He said, you have 2 weeks to find a job and move out because I can't accept a gay son. My sister, Rand, who I love so much, I came out to her when I was 12, and she's like, Hassan, tell me something new. She's like, I've always known and always been... we worked together at McDonald's, and I slept with the manager of McDonald's, and then she found out through another coworker, and that's when I talked to her about it and all that, and it was for her, oh, I'll accept you for who you are, I love you for who you are. She never once threatened me to tell my parents or anything. She's always been supportive, trying to lie for me and hide for things when I go out with a guy So she's always been the light and support of my life. So my sister said, Hassan, you're not you don't have a job right now. You're going to school, just for once, go back in the closet again, at least until you find, get yourself with support and all that. She's like, right now, I don't think you're ready to just move out on your own and all that. Where are you gonna go, you know? I went back in the closet once again. That's when I then changed almost 360 degrees. I went through a religious phase. I thought by becoming religious that could help me change, because I was just I just don't want to lose my family. I don't want to lose them. I don't want to, what am I supposed to do, you know? So I started going to the mosque, the Ashia Mosque, the Husseiniya, and I started reading about Islam and all that. And ironically enough, it was through that experience is when I actually finally started to accept who I am, I think, because for me, it was through that experience, by going to the mosque and realizing what and also on the side, I had a sexual relationship with also one of the imams as well, who's go figure, he was married, had 3-4 daughters and all that, but. That's the thing. A lot of these men live a double life, you know. They'll get married and their wives don't know anything. In fact, I didn't even know he was one of the imam of the mosque until after. I just met him online, and then after when I started going to that mosque more often, and then I saw him there, I was like, oh, awkward. That experience, that whole going to the mosque and really opened my eyes. I read the Quran through that experience twice. And then I realized, people's interpretation is what sometimes fascinates me, because the language of the Quran is very poetic, very, sometimes there's a lot of vagueness in it, a lot of open interpretations, a lot of stories. So even all the stories, the story of Lut, I've read it a few times, and that's a story that a lot of people say, they use as a source of condemning homosexuality, that this, the idea of the people of Lut were having sex with homosexual sex, and then God sent to destroy them. But then I read more into the story, and then I realized it was rape of angels, and that's what caused all this. So obviously there's more to it, I think. And through that experience of reading the Quran twice and becoming religious is when I actually started to accept who I am as a gay man. I think it was very interesting, yeah. And that then drew the inspiration of writing this book, you know. So after my trip from the Middle East, I definitely hooked up with a lot of guys, and I started becoming more open about myself. And it was just a very beautiful experience. I started to accept myself. I started to like realize that, hey, this is who I am. I can change who I am. I was now I just have to accept it, and become a better person through that experience. So, like my whole life, you know, growing up was difficult because I was trying to confront an identity that I did not want to accept. And all that have changed when on April 9th, 2011. That day, my friend Abbas and I went to another friend's birthday, Mo. It also happened to be this guy's birthday over there. I hadn't met him in person yet, but I did add him on Facebook because I thought he was so hot. It was crazy. And he probably didn't think, he's like, who's this guy adding me, Hassan? Anyways, I told Abbas, my friend, that he said, oh, you write a card to Mo, to Tarn, and he'll write a card to Mo. I was like, well, I don't really know Tarn. Like, what am I going to say? So I just wrote a card to him, wishing him a happy birthday. And then when I gave it to him, he was wearing this like gray vest. I'll never forget this happy birthday sign right there. And he was just like really buffed up. And then I just gave him the card. And I was just like literally like stood like there. Would you guys believe that my heart like literally stopped beating the moment I saw him? I knew he was the one. I know it sounds cliche. I knew he was the one from day one. I forgot my existence. And I knew I saw my whole life through him, you know. And I just couldn't stop looking at him all night. A couple of days later, I went and told like one of my school friends at SFU, I'm going to marry this guy. He's like, girl, slow it down. You just met this guy. Like, get to know him first. What if you meet him and you realize he's not the one, you know? So everything about him, like, you know, changed my life. And then he didn't want to be in a relationship at the beginning. He just got out of one, like, five-year relationship with Brian. So for him, it was just too much. And I was just coming off too strong, too. So we became friends for a couple months. And then September 9, on my birthday, he came as my official date. And then after that, after my birthday, September 9, on September 10, I just couldn't keep it longer anymore. I really, like, had strong feelings for him. So I came out to my mom. Like, I told her I'm gay. She started, like, almost ripping her clothes, crying hysterically, you know. And then my dad told my sister, if I come home and I see him, I don't know what I'm going to do to him. So I just left the house. And I called Atar, and I was like, I don't know where I'm going to, like, live. Can I move in? Like, he lives with his mom and sister, who's now my mom. His mom took me right in. She treated me like her own son from day one. Didn't ask for rent or anything. And was just always been so amazing. So that's why I consider my mom. She's an amazing woman. So, and then we lived together for like 6 months and then got engaged after he proposed. March 9th, 2012 is when we had our engagement. That's when my parents found out about the engagement. I think, like we had a nice, you know, with friends and all that. And one of my friend Ricky posted photos on Facebook. And I guess he had a public profile, so my cousins found out and all that. That's when things kind of went downhill. My dad stopped talking to me. I haven't seen him for 6 years now. That's okay. And then my mom also, like, was very difficult. I finally saw my mom, actually, like, a couple years ago. And now we see each other, like, here and there. But it's very, like, far in between. But we're always, like, texting each other, talking about, like, oh, like, watch, because I like watching Arabic shows, so, like, her and I would be, like, you know, gossiping and stuff together through the text and all that, even though we don't see each other that often. All my cousins stopped talking to me and everything, and it was just, like, real bad. But I realized in the end, I'm in love with this guy, and my love is what keeps me strong. And God is so great and accepting, despite what other people say, and I know God created me this way. And he loves me just the way I am. I found this balance between religion and sexuality. I'm a very proud Muslim. And a lot of people say, oh, Islam doesn't accept it. But I think there's a lot of things that people don't see, like that actually Islam is a very accepting and loving religion. I'm not practicing Muslim. I don't pray five times a day. But I do inherit all the beautiful things that my religion taught me. And one of the most important things that it taught me is to overlook this radicalism and just accept and love people for who they are. Because religion is love for me.
For just one moment, people all over the world could know this love, could know this love, could know this love.
Today, Iraqi-Canadian author Hassan Amir spoke at the Denman Island Readers and Writers Festival in British Columbia. His novel is called God in Pink. The next time somebody asks you why there are no pride parades for straight white men, and people still do ask, the UK pop punk band Rocking Horse Club has this melodic retort.
Life is so easy for the straight white man. A woman can't do all the things we can. Walk in the dark and feel secure. Do the same job but get paid more. We wear what we like and we don't get shamed. We don't get raped and then get blamed. Is it so hard to understand? Life is so easy for the straight white man. And get left alone. No one ever tells us to go back home. And we're much less likely to go to jail. Because the system is biased against black males. The system fails unless you're pale. Life is so easy for the straight white male.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week, Jessica Andrea and Michael LeBeau, produced by Steve Pride, contributed program material with special thanks to Frida Worden and Wings. Mishari Rashid Alafasi, Fred Small, and the Rocking Horse Club performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentham, our contributing affiliate stations, and our listener donors for making this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WDIY Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, KUNM Albuquerque, New Mexico, 5GFM Kadena, South Australia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.